As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
Hello and welcome back to Pod on the Time, the Athletic's dedicated Newcastle United podcast. My name's Taylor Payne and I'm joined, as ever, by George Colkin and Chris Woff. How the devil are you, George Colkin? Are you all right?
I'm okay, yes. I'm probably half good, half reeling, and I'll have to explain. I mean, good, because obviously a good weekend of football entertainment and also theatrical entertainment, which I'll come on to mention. But yeah, still half reeling. I arrived in the press box on Saturday at St. James's Park and sat myself down, got myself ready. Chris wandered over a little later, he did, and you know, we have these podcast persona slightly, don't we? I mean, they're sort of exaggerations of how we are in real life. But in reality, Chris is, you know, he's not only a valued colleague, he's also one of my dearest, closest friends and someone who I absolutely love to bits. So when we meet, we always hug. You know, we don't just shake hands, we always hug. So I stood up to hug Chris and he placed his right hand delicately on my left buttock and tapped it three times. And we stood looking at each other for a little while, and Chris immediately said, "I'm really sorry about that. I didn't mean to do that." And it was like, it was sort of like a manager would tap his player three times, you know, a couple of times on the buttock as he goes on the pitch.
"Go on, son, well done.
Go on, son, well done." Yeah. Or comes off, yeah. Well, it was, and yeah, we just stood looking at each other for a little while. And it was literally a touching moment.
Yeah, literally. Yeah.
HR complaints have been issued for much less. But I do want to follow that up slightly, because I then saw Chris again yesterday, Sunday, because we went to see War Bella at the Theatre Royal, starring Catherine Dryden, who we had on the pod a couple of weeks ago. And Jesus, she was absolutely brilliant. It's a fantastic story. It's a great play. She was just absolutely sensational. So well done. Well done to her. Got a standing ovation at the end. Brilliant. Anyway, I had the tickets and I met Chris outside the theatre. And we embraced again, and Chris did exactly the same thing to me. And he said, "I've just done that again, haven't I?" And it's like, yes, Chris, you have. And we are close, and we do have a like good relationship, but I feel the need to call this behaviour out before it goes any further. That's all I'm doing at this point, okay?
Chris, do you have anything to say in your defence?
My lawyers advised me not to speak on this matter, so...
I think that's probably for the best, to be honest. It sounds like Chris wants to take your relationship to the next level, George. I know you were saying it's a very friendly relationship.
Yeah, it was kind of Chris
it's forward, isn't it?
Yeah, Chris absolutely shocked himself with his behaviour and shocked me as well. But anyway, yeah, I mean,
bless him.
Yeah,
he's looking very sheepish.
How are you?
Me, I'm all right. Yeah, I'm absolutely like riddled with hay fever at the minute. I don't know what the hell's happened. It suddenly just appeared out of nowhere. So it sounds like I'm full of snot and shite this weekend. It's because I am full of snot and shite, basically.
Nice.
Yeah, lovely. Just what you want for an audio recording.
Hay fever works at both ends, does it?
it does in the town of Hebburn, Chris. There's Hebburn here, FIFA. It's very different. How are you anyway, Chris? Are you all right? It sounds like you've had a canny weekend to yourself.
I have, yes. Thank you, yes. The same as George. I was there at the Theatre Royal yesterday, and that was absolutely phenomenal. I mean, I was exhausted just watching, never mind thinking about how Catherine Dryden managed to get through that performance, and it is a staggering story, so please read up on it if you haven't already to find out more about it. I know Catherine came on and explained it. But then also, yeah, Saturday in itself, Newcastle United's game was exhausting for the first half, as we're going to come on to, the first half was very, very different to the second half.
Absolutely was. So, yeah. Right then, chaps, shall we crack on?
Let's do it.
Let's do it.
Back it goes to Arblaster now. Harmer whips it in. It's a good ball. It's a goal. Sheffield United, bottom of the Premier League, staring relegation in the face, have scored the opener short corner in the fifth minute. And Austin Trusty, the defender, as Cameron Archer threatens to get away from Cher into the box. Archer,
it's got to score. It's got to score.
Jacob Murphy urged to go forwards. Isak making the run. Murphy, that's a great ball to find Isak. Alexander Isak does what Alexander Isak does best. Brereton Diaz in behind away from Byrne, around Dubravka. Dan Byrne recovers, sliding in to stop the ball going into the net.
How are we level? We should be forward down.
So Eddie Howe's not quite red hot, Mags, ended up inflicting another heavy defeat on the now relegated Sheffield United. But that certainly doesn't tell the whole story, George, does it? I think the old cliche, a game of two halves.
My goodness, yeah. That first half was alarming, really, wasn't it? And, you know, you put it into the same kind of context as Crystal Palace a few days before, and it was very much, you know, very much on a par with that. And, yeah, just the way that Sheffield United were able to get through the Newcastle United team, to be kind of left in one-on-one positions, or, you know, to be kind of confronting Newcastle centre-halves. And, yeah, they go ahead very early. And from that point, it could have been 2-0, it could have been 3-0, and it was like, oh my God, what is going on? It was one of those moments.
It certainly was a thoroughly flat first 45, Chris, wasn't it? And the Blades cut through us. They could probably and should have had more than that single goal that they managed. And Captain Dan Byrne was coming to the rescue, the main reason that they didn't.
Yeah, I mean, it's a game where if you look at it, Newcastle really should have been 3-1 down at half time, and then by the end should have won 9-1. That's how
that's
baffling it was in terms of it was. And yeah, I thought that Sheffield United came with a purpose. Newcastle looked ponderous on the ball. They looked a bit laboured off it. I thought they were tentative in what they were trying to do. It wasn't quite the same as Palace in terms of the lack of reluctance to shoot, as Eddie Howe referenced them, but there was just, I don't know, it almost felt like Newcastle needed something to get them going. They needed a buzz of energy.
Yeah.
And Sheffield United capitalised on that. They obviously came knowing that if they lost, they were going to be relegated, and they had a sort of point to prove, and I thought that they were really, really good in the first half. Arblaster in midfield in the first half absolutely ran the game. He was absolutely excellent. Newcastle's midfield couldn't get near him. And I think what was alarming about it was there were similar themes to what we have seen previously from this Newcastle side in terms of a team being able to almost just flood through the middle of the park and Newcastle have no answers to it, really. You mentioned Dan Byrne. He blocked one of Archer's shots when he managed to get in down the channel between Cher and Livramento and then cut inside. He also blocked from Brereton Diaz when Diaz had been played through from Ball, which had come through the defence, who just run through Newcastle's midfield and then played it through. And that was what was so concerning. It just seemed, you thought after the first 10 minutes, all right, Newcastle will wake up here. And they didn't. And even when they equalised, and we'll come on to that in a second, but even when Newcastle equalised, it wasn't suddenly that the backside fell out of Sheffield United. That was more in the second half, really, that happened, when I think the enormity of sort of relegation dawned on them. But up till that point, I thought during the first half, they were excellent. As poor as Newcastle were, I thought Sheffield United were excellent.
Yeah.
And they just seemed to be more up for it than Newcastle at that stage. They were quicker at everything. They had more purpose about them. They were better technically on the ball. And Newcastle just couldn't get in the game.
I want to single out and praise Ole Arblaster for a very different reason. Mainly because he's got a name which is taken straight from the silent movie era. I mean, Fatty Arbuckle.
Yeah, good. Yeah.
Ollie Arblaster. Yeah. I mean,
it's very music hall, isn't he?
Oh yeah, musical. Yeah, yeah, one of the two. Yeah, Ollie Arblaster. What a name!
Brilliant. He should be congratulations stuff. That's what he should be doing, I think, instead of playing football.
Well, or balancing off tall buildings and being chased by policemen.
Or driving a car and all the doors fall off at the same time and all the wheels pop off.
Yeah, Ollie Arblaster. Yeah.
Right. One moment of real quality from Alexander Isak, George, and a terrific ball from Jacob Murphy took us in, very grateful to be level at the break. I have to mention, in the Isak goal, the movement by Alexander Isak was world class.
Yeah.
And I mean, and that term gets thrown about, doesn't it? But it was world class.
No, I think he is world class. I think I've, you know, definitely sort of come to that sort of realization or conclusion this season. He just is absolutely exceptional. We'll talk about some of his numbers a bit later on, but yeah, the way he ghosts one way and then ghosts the other. I did that Partridge-esque sort of there's that watery fluidity about him. The way he just moves and sways, it's like, it's just so beautiful to watch. And then by the time he gets the ball, it looks like he was always going to get the ball. Just gorgeous. And it was a brilliant through ball. And yeah, very, very lucky to be 1-1 at the break in terms of that scoreline. And I think, you know, that break came at the right time for Newcastle. It gave them a chance to sort of regroup and take a breath. And I sort of posted something on X at halftime saying, you know, that was bad. But you get the feeling that if Sheffield United concede another goal, that'll be it. And there was that sort of feeling. But
yeah,
Newcastle, yeah, they were very lucky to have Isak. One at the one end of the pitch, and as you and Chris mentioned, Dan Burn was just immense yet again.
Magnificent, wasn't he?
At centre half, just absolutely brilliant. The way he's taken to his, it's his natural position, but the way he's taken to it and being a proper captain, proper leader, throwing himself, to clear the ball when it really mattered. And yeah, Newcastle were indebted to those two players at halftime.
Taylor, you mentioned Isak's movement, and I think what is so impressive about it is he wants the ball earlier from Murphy.
He does.
And so he makes the run, the initial run, and he goes into an offside position, and then he doesn't get the ball at that stage. But unlike, I think, even Isak of 12 months ago, I know this is something he has actually been working on as well, but also a lot of other strikers wouldn't have arced their run as well as he did, but he made sure that he basically hid behind the second defender. He'd got past the first one, hid behind the second defender, got himself back onside, and then Jacob Murphy plays the wonderful through ball. But then it's also the fact that he doesn't even take a touch. He just positions his body over the ball and hits the first time. You see the angle from behind his shot. He doesn't have that much of the goal to aim for. And Fodringham actually had a very good game, which is why I said it could have been 9-1 in the end, because he makes some great saves with himself, but he's got absolutely no chance with it. It's basically the one part of the goal. And it's just the way that Isak finishes across the goal,
wasn't it?
Either side when he's on, you know that he's going to find that bottom corner. And yeah, that was literally the only chance. It was the only touch he had in the opposition box in the first half. I think he only had 13 touches in the first half. The only touch he had, and he's that clinical. And that got Newcastle level and really managed to finally get them a belated foothold in the game.
Yeah, so a blunt performance in the first half, and Eddie Howe delivered yet another sharpener at half time. This one was more Fulham than Palace, though, as it seemed to really do the trick, George, didn't it? They came out and looked a different unit in the second half.
Yeah, absolutely, and they needed it. And obviously the context for the match was that if Newcastle won, Sheffield United would be relegated, and you know, fair play to them for that sort of attitude that they showed in the first half. They didn't go down without a fight, that's certainly true, but once they went behind, that was it, and it did become a case of how many Newcastle would score, and it kind of could have been anything from that point. But Newcastle had to regroup, and they had to go again. They had to start again, really, because they got away with one in the first half. They really did.
They certainly did. And Bruno headed us into the lead, and he raises the corner flag to the Gallagher end, where an hour before, 10,000 fans had sent a special message to him and Joe Linton, our boys from Brazil, George. It was a really special moment, that, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was beautiful. I mean, so, you know, a couple of things I'd sort of like to say about that. The message that was kind of spelled out in Portuguese, they had the Brazilian flag on shiny sort of silver paper, and then the legend written in Portuguese, which translated from Alianza and Rio to Newcastle upon Tyne, home away from home, Jolinton and Bruno, our Brazilian Geordies. And I did a very, very short video and put it online, 6-second video, and I did that. Now, the point I'm trying to make here is really to pay.
This is a humble brag. That's the point you're trying to make here, isn't it? Yeah.
It's not because it doesn't do me any good particularly. But but that video got picked up obviously by some Brazilian accounts and got retweeted and things like that.
Yeah.
And then Bruno quote tweeted it after the match. And as things stand on Monday morning, that video has been viewed 836,000 times. And the reason I'm pointing that out is that it wasn't shown on Match of the Day, that display.
It wasn't, was it?
But War Flags do this week in, week out. They show this version of Newcastle, which certainly in this case gets beamed around the world, whether it's through social media or when it is shown on the television and stuff like that. And my God, how valuable is that? Must that be for Newcastle United to have that, you know, to have these lads and lasses who give up their own time to sort of do these incredible displays to get it sorted? It's not club funded. It's fan funded.
Yeah.
All volunteers. They were back in on the Sunday, by the way, to take all the silver plate stuff back, so they can reuse it in future displays. And you know, they're effectively serving as the like marketing arm of Newcastle. And can you imagine how, if you're a Brazilian fan and you're in Rio or one of those places, and you see that, you see how Newcastle fans treat Brazilian players. Why wouldn't you want to come and be part of that and to sort of see this relationship and to see Bruno's response? So I think it was like hugely, you know, I'm not going to say that that display will keep Bruno here this summer, but it's not going to hurt that, is it?
No,
and he did look genuinely affected by that response. And I just thought it was a beautiful moment. But I wanted to make that point that War Flags are doing this incredible job on behalf of all of us, on behalf of the club, selling it to places like that. I just think, absolutely, absolutely wonderful and seen all around the world.
Yeah, magnificent stuff. And Bruno was pleased as punch to see that tribute to him and Joe Linton.
Yeah, to be honest, I was now speaking with Joe in the changing room. Me and him, we wanted to cry when we've seen this. It was very special. It really taught me. I make some effort to not cry in the pitch because it was very, very beautiful. My family, they sent me a message. They were very happy as well. So thank you for the whole fans. They have been unbelievable with me and with Joe as well.
Bless him. I can't help but beam, Chris, when I hear Bruno Guimarães speaking. He's just got an enthusiasm for life, hasn't he? He's lovely. What a lovely lad.
He does, and I mean, because there was the display, so he sort of tracked him when he came out of the tunnel. And I mean, George thought this was a very boring point, but I'm going to mention it because I've mentioned it to him three times. But I believe that Joe Linton's son came out with him as one of the mascots. So they obviously Joe Linton himself couldn't be involved because he was injured, but he spoke about him and Joe Linton and the response that they had. And then you saw when they do the sort of bit where the two teams shake hands and they walk around the Premier League display, and then you could see Bruno was almost like trying not to look to begin with, because I think he didn't want to cry on the pitch, and then eventually went across and he applauded the fans who chanted Bruno, and he did a little bow with his hands, a bow gesture. But you can see it does mean a heck of a lot to him, and obviously this has come on the back of a week when there has been a heck of a lot of speculation, which is not going to go away at any stage, but seemed to be a quite timely leaking of information about his contract clause, which is that obviously there's a £100 million release clause within his contract, but this summer it is only active between May and June the 30th, which is obviously the profitability and sustainability rules deadline. Eddie Howe confirmed that in his pre-match press conference on Friday, and that seems to be of benefit to the club. Now, Bruno himself, after the match, obviously spoke to TV, but we waited by the side of the pitch as the media in the mix zone, keen to speak to Bruno, and he came out, he had a nice bath, he came out last of everyone, and then basically jogged through, no interest in doing it whatsoever. I said, oh look, everyone's waited for you, and he just walked off. And I think that we're unlikely to hear from a written media perspective between now and the end of the season, because this speculation is not going to go away. Now, it seems that it's to Newcastle's benefit that they have this release clause that only goes to June the 30th, because of the reasons I mentioned to do with PSR and the likelihood of how could... Given that means it goes into this current financial year, and so many clubs alongside Newcastle are very, very close to the limit. Could anyone afford to actually sign him? And obviously there's only a very limited number of clubs who he would move to anyway. But still, there was a reason why that leaked out before Eddie Howe confirmed it last week. There is going to constantly be this speculation surrounding Paris Saint-Germain, Arsenal, Man City, whoever it may be. But just the way that he embraced the situation with Newcastle United supporters, you could see that absolutely. Is genuine with them, yet there is almost that sort of... It's not a contradiction because you can have it with any player, but he is also a very ambitious player of his own accord, and I'm sure that for him there is potential interest in if one of the world's biggest clubs did come in for him. That's not the same as that he wants to leave and he doesn't want to be at Newcastle, but I do think that people are trying to throw themselves into one camp or the other, and week on week be like, Bruno clearly wants to stay because he's doing this, or he clearly wants to go. The same, that both things can be true. He doesn't mean that he wants to go, it doesn't mean that he necessarily wants to stay. But he genuinely loves the way that the relationship he has with Newcastle United fans, as well as being a ridiculously ambitious footballer of his own right.
Yeah, and this is something I want to very, very briefly mention here, just to tee it up for later in the pod. But this is why, I mean, War Flag's incredible display, but that alone is not going to keep Bruno or, you know, Alexander Isak or other players at the club. That relationship, it's brilliant. Newcastle have had fantastic relationships with great players in the past. What is really important at this stage of their development is that Newcastle can show that they can match the ambitions of these players right here, right now, because they have a finite shelf life as players. And that's why this run, this result, you know, the whole thing that went around it is really important. But that's something we'll come on to talk about in greater depth in a bit.
Yes.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
I'd eat more, kid.
Paul runs over the ball. Gordon curls it in around the back foot. Top scorer comes towards the ball and just slots it into the bottom corner. Fotheringham didn't really move. It's a header from Anderson. It's gone in. Bruno celebrates.
Dear, oh dear.
It might be an own goal. It is Newcastle's fourth of the afternoon. Gordon to Barnes. Man on. Harvey Barnes, edge of the area. We know what he does here. It's Callum Wilson.
Poor old Ben Osborne was bereft after a terrible own goal with Newcastle piling on the pressure.
Was it terrible? I thought it was really hilarious. Good finish.
That's what I thought it was. And I really, really enjoyed the fact that the camera zoomed right in on his face just after the ball hit the net, and he clearly shouted out loud, "Ah, oh, for fuck's sake," which I thought was fabulous. You don't see enough of that.
And yet Bruno Guimarães was still announced as the goal scorer over the Tannoyates in James's pocket. It was almost confusion. Everyone sort of turned around. I was like, did he?
Elliot Anderson had the header, didn't he? Which kind of led to it. And I was quite sort of disappointed that he didn't get his goal, because I'm dying for him to score. That lad has worked so hard this season. Obviously missed a lot through injury. But you saw the ball trickle in the net and Elliot Anderson just kind of put his hands on his head as if to say, oh, I nearly had that. But yeah, it was a hilarious moment. And then Isak's penalty took him to 19 goals in the Premier League season. He's the hottest Premier League goal scorer in 2024. He's now matched the second longest scoring streak by a Newcastle striker at St James's Park, George. I mean, some effort.
Yeah, what more can we say about him? He is just class. He's always been class. He's always had that kind of great movement. But, you know, the thing that they've talked about inside the club, thing that Eddie Howe has mentioned a lot is about getting him to score the scruffy goals, the ugly goals. I mean, he makes everything look like a work of art, including his penalties.
Yeah.
But he has been prolific this season. And that is, you know, if that was the thing that's missing, he's shown that he can do that. And he's just a wonderful, wonderful footballer. And yeah, they needed him. I mean, one of the things I always said about Shearer as a player is that obviously his goal record spoke for itself. You know, he won games by the dozen for Newcastle. He also saved games. You know, he saved games because, particularly towards the end of his career, he would often be Newcastle's best centre-half, defending at corners and, you know, all that sort of stuff. But it was also that willpower. And Isak and Dan Byrne, in that first half, got Newcastle out of the hole. And so he has that kind of characteristic as well, that he's, you know, he's able to, you know, he saved that game for Newcastle before going on to help win it. And I just think that's such an important characteristic to have.
I just wanted to make the point, has Alexander Isak disproved your theory about a twatted penalty as well, George?
Isak doesn't do dicking about. He does do the sort of half run-up, and he does very little backswing, and so it becomes very difficult for the keeper to judge which way he's going to go.
He waits for the keeper, doesn't he, basically, away. Is what he's doing.
He sort of waits for the keeper. But, yeah, you know my feelings. I have to sometimes admit that I live in the modern world, and I have to change my opinions. I can't just be the angry man shouting in the corner, fucking twat it! But that is what I want him to do.
An exclusive from George Corgan there. You can dick about as long as you do it properly. I think that's what we've learned to do.
I think the point about, I mean, you say that Isak is the hottest Premier League goal scorer in 2024. He also has a chance of getting the golden boot now.
He does, yeah.
He's on 19 goals. Haaland went to 21 over the weekend. Cole Palmer's on 20. But you could see that I think part of the reason why Newcastle didn't actually score the 9 that maybe they should have got to was because they seemed determined at one stage to get Isak his hat-trick. And Isak is frustrated. You can see he's visibly frustrated. Callum Wilson is visibly frustrated because he still hasn't got a hat-trick for Newcastle United. They don't settle for just one or two goals. They want more. And actually, Fodringham made a really, really good save to thwart Isak from getting his hat-trick from a shot from the right-hand side, which sort of went low and across him. That's the appetite that you want from a striker. And that was when Shearer interviewed Isak in January, that was the one thing I could see he wanted to ask him about. And when Isak said, yeah, it is about scoring goals, you could see that was sort of confirmation for Shearer about, yeah, he's got the right mentality for me.
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. And by contrast as well, you mentioned Callum Wilson there. He was on the score sheet for the first time since the League Cup exit at Chelsea in mid-December. It's lovely to see him back. But a big second place for him as well, as he moved alongside Peter Beardsley for a goals tally in the Premier League, George. Callum Wilson, I mean, fit and firing. He's a great option to have, isn't he?
Yeah, that's not bad company to be in, is it? One of the best, one of the greatest footballers in Newcastle's history, and a, you know, brilliant footballer. And as you say, when Wilson's angry, hungry, fit, he's great to watch, and it was a fantastic finish, made it look so easy. The frustration is, of course, is just how little he's been around in the last few months. It was just very good to see both him and Harvey Barnes, you know, come on. And so, again, you've got that sense that Newcastle can pick it up another gear.
Yeah.
And they just haven't had that option since the start of the season. I know, you know, have to still mention that they managed to beat Sheffield United 4-1. There's no Nick Pope, there's no Kieran Trippier, there's no Sven Botman, there's no Jill Linton, all players who are guaranteed to be in the starting lineup. I mean, you know, that's more than a third of the team. But yeah, thankfully, having those options is just so important, particularly to the way Newcastle play.
And, I mean, the thing about Callum Wilson as well is that he actually looks, I thought he looked really sharp when he came on. Yeah, you can see he's hungry, he's determined to sort of prove a point as well. And I think the fact that it was an upper body injury has meant that, as Howe said, he hasn't really lost the sort of fitness from his legs and his ability to have trained in that way. It's just the sort of physical contact he hasn't had, but he came on and he did make a difference. And that's, again, if we go back to Aston Villa on the opening day of the season, Newcastle are 4-1 up against Sheffield United, and Eddie Howe doesn't settle for that. He's like, Who will we bring on? We're going to bring on Callum Wilson and Harvey Barnes.
Yeah.
And Newcastle are going for more. They're going for the jugular. And they've now actually equaled their record for the number of goals they've scored in a 38-game Premier League season, Newcastle. And there's still four games remaining. So
yeah, exactly.
That says a heck of a lot about their problems haven't really been in attack this season, even given all the injuries and even the fact that Wilson and Isak have barely featured together, certainly in 2024. The issues have been at the back. And I also just wanted to highlight, because we sort of brushed over it in terms of Bruno Guimaraes scored from what was a really well-worked free kick, and then also the own goal that you mentioned came from an Anthony Gordon corner. Newcastle have actually found a way from set pieces, despite not having Kieran Trippier over the course of the last few weeks, who is essential to everything that they do from a set-piece point of view. He takes 95% of attacking set pieces when he plays, around about that figure, if not more. And actually, Anthony Gordon's proven himself to be very adept from that situation. He's forced a lot of goals over the course of the last couple of weeks from that situation, as well as winning the penalty. But then Lewis Hall's taken a few. Other players have sort of stepped up. And Newcastle have had to accommodate losing that key focus and still actually being effective from set pieces.
Absolutely. Ruthless display against this opposition yet again. The Athletic Football X account posted this. Newcastle United have scored 13 Premier League goals against Sheffield United this season. The most that one team has scored against another in a single campaign in the competition's history. Which is quite remarkable, really, isn't it? Results elsewhere worked out very nicely as well, with draws for West Ham, Chelsea and Man United making us bookies' favourites for sixth, and defeat for Tottenham v Arsenal. Spurs need just 6 points from five games to make it impossible for us to catch them. But they have tough fixtures. And Newcastle inside us fancy we could reach fifth by the end of the season, Chris.
Yeah, I was slightly surprised by this. And this is not me saying that Newcastle are sort of saying that we are going to finish fifth and this is the target. But just having sort of conversations with a couple of people, I was sort of saying, oh yeah, you know, sixth place looks really achievable. Now, yeah, don't forget fifth place. You know, we're still going for fifth. But it sort of shows the mentality as well. And I think I was guilty of this, being my disposition is naturally negative. That post that Manchester City FA Cup game, thinking, what have Newcastle really got to play for you? But the feeling inside the club from those who are driving Newcastle forward, that's not how they've ever felt. They've always been targeting these sort of European positions. And even now, when it looks like sixth is attainable, it's like, well, but we could potentially get fifth here as well. Let's try and get it. And now I think it probably does look beyond Newcastle. Even, as you say, Spurs have a game in hand, they have some very difficult fixtures. But Newcastle also have three away matches, and we know that away from home, they're not quite the force that they are at home. But still, the fact that there is that mentality says a heck of a lot about the drive and the striving for more. And I think that I just thought that was, I was a little bit taken aback by it. But again, that's probably just my natural negative disposition.
I think that's very interesting. And it's great that they have that attitude. I mean, not to sort of be Mr. Negative about this, but we only have to go back to our last pod, which was after Crystal Palace away, and you know, one of the worst performances and of this season without a shadow of a doubt. And it's not just that away Newcastle's away form hasn't quite been the same as its home form. It's they've got the 15th best away record, and with games to come against Burnley, Man United, and Brentford, they're going to have to pick up points from some of those games. Their last home game is against Brighton, who are in a bit of a mess at the minute. They're in free fall, but that's not guaranteed. They can cause teams problems. Newcastle are going to have to find a way of getting results away from home. So I think that's great that they've got that ambition, but you feel like something has to change away from home if they want to finish that high up the table.
Yeah, perhaps aiming high really sums up the theme of the day, more specifically the sense that in the fog of an exhausting season, some people may have perhaps understandably lost sight of what we're trying to achieve here, George.
Yeah, so the thing that I wanted to kind of write about after this match was actually, Chris mentioned it there, going back to that Man City FA Cup game. Now, Newcastle lost, they didn't lose terribly, it was a 2-0 defeat, but it meant that they couldn't win anything this season, and it meant that 69 years without a domestic trophy was going to be 70. And that weekend, they were 10th in the table. And I know from speaking to people inside the club, inside the team, that there was soul searching going on. I don't think it was a desperate moment. I don't think it was crisis. It wasn't anything like that. But there were some sort of similarities to that Leeds match in the January after Eddie Howe's arrival, when he'd done wonders on the training pitch. Everybody was enjoying it. Yeah, everything's got better. Everything's improving. But where are the results? He sort of had to get that result in order to then go away and work on stuff and for everybody to kind of buy into it. And I think after Man City, there was, you know, there are minor parallels. It was like, what are we trying to do as a club here? What are we trying to do as a team? Are we ambitious? Where is our progress? How do we measure that progress? Because, as I say, you know, loads of injuries, but the team were 10th in the table that weekend. And I think there was a slight concern that if you were a Bruno, if you were an Isak, and you talk to each other about, well, can we fulfil our ambitions at St James's Park? There were question marks. So, you know, at the time we wrote about that warm weather training camp in Dubai as a chance to sort of reset, but it was vital, absolutely vital, that Newcastle responded on the pitch, and they have done it. It's 4 wins out of 6. It's 1 defeat. It was a bad defeat at Crystal Palace. Yes, there's been chaos in some of those results and performances, including against Sheffield United, but my goodness, if we, you know, if Newcastle want to keep Bruno, if they want to keep Alexander Isak, yes, showing them love is important, you know, making them feel wanted, but Newcastle have to get back into Europe. They have to finish this season on a high to prove to those players that this is somewhere that they can fulfil their ambitions. Now, at the same time, there was that Joelinton contract extension as well that's happened over this period. That's really important too. So it shows that financially, Newcastle can pay big players what they might want to stay. So it hasn't answered every question because, you know, I think this is, you know, in terms of Bruno Isak, we just have to let the summer play out, see what happens. You know, obviously they didn't sign anybody in January. They need to improve the team. They need to improve the squad again. They're not guaranteed to finish in Europe. You know, they need to do that. But in the sort of immediate aftermath of that Man City game, when there were questions being asked internally of each other, of themselves, they've responded. And that's something that I asked Eddie Howe about after the match on Saturday. I asked him about Manchester City and if that was a delicate moment.
Yeah, it was a difficult moment. I struggle to sort of grade defeats, but for me, every defeat feels exactly the same. Like Wednesday night felt, it's difficult to describe, you know, what losing feels like, but it's just a horrible feeling. And I work as hard as I can to then not feel that again for as long as I possibly can. It's a really big driver for me, actually. But yeah, that defeat against Manchester City, I had a long time to think about it because we were on a plane to Dubai and sort of lots of things going through my mind. What do we do next? Where do we take the team? How can we get our consistency back? I could go on. And that's why I praised the trip to Dubai, because I think it gave us a chance, not just me, but the players, to reset, to get distracted in a different environment, and then come back to Newcastle with a real determination to finish the season on a high.
And just briefly picking up on that, at his pre-match press conference on Friday, as well as talking about Bruno Guimaraes' release clause, Eddie Howe also spoke about the summer, and he was basically asked about, are Newcastle going to try and sign elite players, basically players who are ready-made for the Premier League, and he said that we're not in a position to do that. Now, that shouldn't come as any surprise to anyone because of Newcastle's PSR situation and because of the business they've done over the last few windows, but that is just sort of to reiterate going into this summer that I think the sort of player Newcastle are going to be looking for, I don't think they ideally would like the same sort of player as Manchester City and Arsenal, but I just don't think they can compete at that sort of level. And so then they'll probably go for one below, which means someone like Isak, to when Newcastle signed him, there were doubts about could he adapt to the Premier League, and they had to maybe pay a bit more to get a younger style player. I think it will be players like that, as well as potential free transfers, as we've talked about already, like Lloyd Kelly, for example, at Bournemouth, or Tosin at Fulham. Newcastle are going to have to be smart in this summer window. But Howe said that he has a clear idea as to where he wants to take the team, and that doesn't involve mass change. It's just tweaks here and there.
Yes, absolutely. And George also spoke to Dan Byrne after the final whistle, and he was unequivocal about what he wants from next season.
I think you've got to show that, like, that we are sort of still ambitious. I think it was easy to show that last season with, like, the hype that it was about it.
Yeah.
And then it's about, like, trying to... best teams can do that season after season.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So it's about being able to do that. So I said, like, I still think we can have a really positive end of the season.
Totally. And
obviously go again. That's, like, the challenge next year is going to be, like, we've got to go again. We've got to win something.
Next season?
Yeah. Got to. For me, like, also that's just personally, I just think with the squad that we've got and, like, the momentum that we've got as a club, like,
yeah,
that's got to be what aim next season is, to come away with some sort of...
I think you could hear there was a slight bit of surprise in my voice when it was like, oh, next season. And again, I was asking Dan, that was a very specific question or a couple of questions. It was about Man City and the aftermath. And so, again, just to reiterate, I do think it's been really important that that Newcastle do this. But yeah, I was obviously talking to him about Bruno and Isak and the importance of matching their ambition. So yeah, I mean, that's a big statement. Obviously, Dan is part of a special team, a special dressing room, and I do think they really want something to show for it in the here and the now. But yeah, I was quite surprised that he was so sort of determined about that. But brilliant to hear that.
Right then, let's take a short break and we'll round up some more interesting stuff from Saturday in just a moment.
Come on, you Maggies.
So, a nice moment for the lasses as they paraded the FAWNL Premier Northern title in front of the crowd at half time. Have a listen to this.
Thank you very much indeed. We seem to be making a habit of these special guests, don't we? But I've got to say, these deserve a lot of credit. 2 weeks ago at Kingston Park, they managed themselves a 10-0 victory against Huddersfield. That, in turn, gave them their second consecutive promotion, which is absolutely incredible. Please put your hands together, along with Becky Langley. It is your Newcastle United women! Along with their coaching staff, players and their manager, deserving of the ovation. One more time, what a fantastic achievement for Newcastle United women!
That was a fabulous moment. Yeah, really good. Obviously, they've done the hard work. They didn't have a game this last weekend. They've got their final game coming up. But yeah, brilliant. Chris and I had a chat with some of the staff members and players before the match, which was really nice and just great that they got that recognition at St James's. Obviously, they've played there, but yeah, fabulous. Really good.
Lovely moment, yes. And it was a big day for visitors on Saturday, Chris, as well, wasn't it? Some friendly faces from the US of A.
Yes, so Shamir from Orlando was there before the match and came across and said that he was a big fan of the podcast and listened to us and just gives a quick shout out. But then George and I, as we were going to see the members of the Newcastle United women team before the match, just sat next to them was Corey and three of his friends from the USA who had come across. First time they'd been to St. James's Park. He'd followed Newcastle for quite a while, but they were there for the match, and it was just lovely to hear from them. He's also emailed in to basically say thank you for George and I for coming across, but it's just amazing for I'm sure an experience for him, and after a difficult first half to have seen the team win 5-1, just great to hear that sort of feedback as well.
All the way from Dallas, Texas, and lovely email from Corey, so thank you very much. Hope you had a great time. He says that they've been Newcastle fans since 2012. That was their first trip to St James's, and he talked about getting emotional as the teams came out of the tunnel. A strange sensation for a 38-year-old from Texas with no real tie to the team or the region. And then he said that much of that connection is thanks to us, Taylor, Jacob, he wanted to call out as well. So I mean, that is just,
that's very lovely.
That's just incredible to hear. We honestly thank you so much for listening, and it was great to meet you. And hopefully the team will play in Dallas at some point, and we can do some tailgating.
He did say in his email as well, I listen to the pod regularly, although admittedly I can't keep pace with this twice weekly schedule. And I thought, you know what, mate, that's us as well. We're right there with you.
the team haven't been able to cope with three games a week. Can we cope with two pods a week? I'm not sure. Yeah. Maybe we need to improve our squad for next season.
That's it. We need a bit more depth.
Chris, you binned off.
A very familiar face from across the water in the other direction as well, Chris.
Yes, so I'm going to get Ollie to put a link into the show notes for an interview I actually did back in 2020 with a guy called, he actually is literally Mr. Newcastle. So this is Rolf Newcastle Corneliusson. Now, it's quite a complicated backstory as to how he actually came to be officially called Newcastle, but the article explains it a little bit more. Rolf explains it a little bit here. And basically, since the 70s, he's been coming across to watch Newcastle when he can. He's been across for more than 100 matches. And despite being from a small fishing village in Sweden, he is the biggest Newcastle United fan you will just about meet. So yeah, it was just lovely to catch up with him. So here was a short interview I did with him just before the match on Saturday. It is 2:09, so kickoff is 51 minutes away, and I'm just stood next to the Bobby Robson statue with a very special guest who is across in the UK to see Newcastle today. He's seen them more than 100 times over the years since he started coming, and he actually has Newcastle in his name. It is Rolf Newcastle Corneliusson. Rolf, very nice to see you. Can you just give a brief explanation as to how you came to support Newcastle, please?
Yeah, I would try. As I told you before, you know my English aren't too good, but yeah, I came here back in 1973 with my father. He was a fisherman who was fishing shrimps outside North Shields. So in the beginning of the 70s he came here and watched the games and brought him stuff for me, t-shirts and scarves and so sort of things. So 73 he brought me over here for the first time, and since then I'm stuck. So I've been here regularly since then. It's been a roller coaster.
I can very much imagine. And obviously, Newcastle have never won anything during that time.
I got my first, standard, what you call it, in 1969, when I won the Fair Cup. Since then, no. But we're hanging in.
And I know that you're a big fan of Newcastle Brown Ale. You always have one in the strawberry you come across. I mean, can you just give us some of your memories coming across to see Newcastle? What are your favourite games that you've come across to see?
Oh, I've seen many great games. I've seen lots of derbies against Sunderland. I've never seen us lose against Sunderland. I saw the 3-1 game when Beardsley scored a hat-trick. And I also had the famous game when Shearer scored a famous goal against Everton. I saw the 4-3 against Man City. Yeah, I see a lot of them. Yeah, they're many.
And briefly, again, I know it's quite a complicated story, but to change your name to actually have Newcastle in it, what was the motivation behind that? Yeah,
from the start, it was a competition in Sweden who has a middle name, a football team. Yeah. So I sent in, my name is Rolf, you can win a trip to that town. So I just go for it and said, my name is Newcastle. Is it? And then you're in the final then. So then I approach to be called Newcastle. And I said, no. And they said, no. And I have to go to a higher instance, what you call it?
Court.
Yes. They brought it a long way up in court before they say yes. So it was in the paper all over the world. They called me from China, from South America, from Italy, and was in the English news as well.
Because a lot of your friends, they sometimes just refer to you as Newcastle, don't they, or over the years?
Yeah, they always say Newcastle, you know. Yes.
And your son and your grandson are both named after Newcastle players as well. Do you want to tell us after which players?
My son is named Mick, after Mick Quinn, who was huge at the time. You can call him huge, yeah. And Mick himself got a son 7 years ago, and it's called Tino, after Tino Spriddle then.
And his wife doesn't know that that's why it's called Tino, does she?
No.
She just thinks it's a nice name.
Yes, it's family secret.
And a few years ago, you actually received a phone call, didn't you, from the former owner of Newcastle United?
Can I say here? Yeah, I'm still talking to him. Yeah, he helped me. His wife. His wife is from Sweden.
Linda.
So they phoned me up. And they asked me over. Except when they phoned me, broke down. So I had to wait.
Yeah.
But when it's over, they pay for me to come over. So it was real nice. But would I dare to say that?
So that was.
He's been very nice to me. I know what he's done, but he's been very nice to me.
That is referencing Mike Ashley after Rolf managed to officially change his name to Newcastle. So is it actually on your passport as well that says Newcastle now?
Yeah. I promise you to show me. Next time I bring it, then I show it to you.
So has anyone said anything to you when you come through the airport?
This time I come. The man who's sitting in the boat, he was a West Ham supporter. He say, I don't like you, man. He said, how come? Everything changed for us. We were on the run. We were beaten here, 4-3. Everything changed. But I let you in anyway, just this time.
Obviously, Newcastle United have a couple of Swedish players at the moment.
Yeah.
Just how excited are you to see Alexander Isak today? He could score for the seventh game in a row.
Yeah, he's getting better and better. But from the start, I think I was a bit worried. But I think he's getting, read the English game.
He's learning better.
He's getting better and better. I think. So I'll have 2 for him today.
And how is Alexander Isak viewed in Sweden at the moment?
He's not so popular in Sweden because he's not presenting the, you know, he's in the, he's playing for Sweden.
Yeah.
He never scored there. Yeah. So everybody, when he scores here, everybody says, why you think, can't you score here? But I say, I'd rather score here. Sweden is not so big for me as Newcastle, you know?
So Newcastle is bigger for you than...
Yes, very much. They asked me once in Swedish mag if I want to see Sweden win the World Cup or Newcastle to win the Premier League. So I start laughing so hard. So they say, oh, was it a dumb question? Yeah, very dumb. Yeah, of course, it was Sweden. They said, no, no. I said, Newcastle, of course.
Absolutely brilliant, that.
Yeah, it wasn't that short, Chris. It's quite a long interview. But my goodness, that is... Oh, God, I had a smile on my face listening to that lush. All the way through. I loved hearing the sort of the crowd noises behind outside the stadium. And you were obviously, you were smiling and laughing as you chatted to him. But just, yeah, fabulous.
The sheer fabulous enthusiasm stories from Mr. Newcastle, yeah, just shines through, doesn't it?
Tino and Mick.
Tino and Mick, I mean, that's great. And Mick, his son also, he is the guy who has basically... made some songs which have gone viral before, including the Alan Saint-Maximin song. So that was the, if you've heard that, that is Rolf's son, Mr. Newcastle's son.
There you go. And it wasn't just Mr. Newcastle in tune. In fact, a whole flock of Swedish mugs swooped in. Here they are serenading their favourite compatriot.
Alexander Isak!
Absolutely superb. Absolutely superb. Love it. Love the energy. Love the energy, lads. Keep it going. George, a trip to Sweden could represent a mixed bag for you, though, couldn't it? Sweden have rejected the introduction of VAR, according to Ian Dark. It could be the start of something big, that.
Yeah, I'm all in favour of that. Yeah, let's. If they could get rid of XG as well, that would be great. Double pivots, Chris Woff. Get rid of those few things. Football would be a lot better, wouldn't it?
Yeah, but Kira Rieng also sent in a tweet saying, we found these while on a trip to Sweden. And it was bottles of Carabao energy drink, which, as we know, is your favourite drink in the world, George, isn't it?
I mean, I just need to clear something up. I mean, ever since Newcastle went out of the FA Cup, I mean, Carabao is absolutely my drink of... Is it energy drink? I don't know what it is. I mean, it is absolutely my drink of choice. It's a great product. It's beautiful. Can't wait to sample more of it next season. It's the only one I really care about. Champions League, whatever. You know, Carabao, that's where it is.
Keep your Gazprom. We want Carabao.
Yeah, absolutely. Beautiful. Beautiful.
Right then, chaps, let's move on to something else. And we're just about done, but let's round up a little bit of news that we have to catch up on after The Athletic, specifically David Ornstein, pod-bombed us on Thursday. It takes something, doesn't it, when you're getting pod-bombed by your own organisation. Dan Ashworth is to seek arbitration to break the stalemate between Newcastle United and their Mancunian namesakes. Manchester United reported to be offering £2 million to release Ashworth from his current contract, close enough to half of what Newcastle paid Brighton to expedite his arrival to the northeast. Chris, what do we know about this?
Yes, so as things stand, Dan Ashworth remains a Newcastle United employee, but he is on gardening leave and has been since February. Newcastle are still paying him. He is still under contract, but Manchester United, as we know, want to take him there to be their sporting director. Amanda Staveley, the co-owner, met with Sir Jim Ratcliffe, the Manchester United corner, a few weeks ago, and that was partly to discuss the ongoing situation. As of yet, as you mentioned, supposedly from the Manchester United end, the suggestion is they're willing to pay about £2 million. They are suggesting that's how much Newcastle played Brighton for Ashworth. It was actually slightly more than that, but it wasn't the figure that Newcastle at least started negotiations with and are trying to get from Manchester United. So that situation is still ongoing, and Dan Ashworth himself has set along proceedings to take Newcastle to arbitration. So that is due to start it next month, May, and could last a matter of weeks. It may not get to that stage because there could be mitigation and the likes beforehand, but as things stand, as Newcastle continue their own search for a sporting director, the Dan Ashworth situation is still going on in the background.
Yeah, just to very briefly add to that, so an arbitration case that does, eventually that involves a ruling and a judgment, but in the meantime, both parties are obliged to mediate, so those mediation talks will carry on. could very well be finished before arbitration would actually start. And just to clarify something, we're not totally incompetent. We did know last week that this news was coming and recorded a segment on it. But our pod came out before the news came out, so we didn't use it in Absolutely. The end. So we weren't actually pod-bombed.
We kind of pod-bombed ourselves, didn't we, in a way?
So in fact, we've pod-bombed ourselves. Yeah, that's quite difficult to say, so maybe I just won't bother.
Fair play. Right then, chaps, that's just about it. Thank you very much for your time, Chris.
You're welcome, and if this is to be my last podcast because of if George does take anything any further, then it has been a pleasure, and thank you very much, everyone.
Well, Chris, we are actually about to meet in real life to have a coffee to talk about, you know, some of our Newcastle plans. I'm going to be judging your greeting of me quite seriously.
Yeah, I was going to say I haven't seen Chris in person for a little while, but I am quite looking forward to it now, I must be honest.
Yeah, it's just a slight change in our relationship. That's all. Yeah. It's fine. It's all good.
All right.
It's all good.
Yeah. Thank you very much, George. Thanks for your time.
Yeah, very welcome. Enjoyed this one. Obviously enjoyed most of Saturday as well. Good weekend. And look forward to chatting later on in the week.
Absolutely. Right, then get in touch at Pod on the Tyne on Twitter or X and email us at podonthetyne@theathletic.com. That's it. Have a good week. We shall speak to you later on in the week. From everybody at Pod on the Tyne, thanks for listening. Goodbye.
The Athletic.